Age of Radio.
What is going on, everybody? We are back. This is episode 250 on the button of the Dark Windows podcast. My name is Kevin.
And I'm the other one.
Yes, he's also Kevin, if you're not familiar.
Hey, you know, I got to say this before we start. Little banter, you know.
Do it.
I got two banter things.
Okay.
So, one, we got a great fucking podcast group. I'm going to say that on Facebook. I'm going to say that you know, I really have to put it out to everyone that's a part of that. Sure. You guys are just fucking great.
You know, I was really looking at it like, there's a lot of other shows I listen to where they've got like fucking like lawyers and doctors and shit listening. Like, we got a lot of just blue collar motherfuckers, and like, that's kind of awesome because that's what we are.
Yeah,
you know,
but, I mean,
so we're just fucking working folks making a podcast and,
but we also probably have some other people
kind of being dipshits in the meantime. We got one listener for sure that drives an ambulance, which is like out of my fucking, you know, purview of anything I'd be able to do.
I mean, but like when, I don't know, it just seems like within the past, like, I'll say month, maybe two, whatever, people have just like, I don't know, kind of come out of their shells a little bit. And it's like, it's we don't have to start the discussion. We don't have to post things to, like, start a whole fucking bullshit.
I did start one today where it was like, you know, fucking, what is it? Tell us one uninteresting fact about yourself. And, of course, I'm in mine, I'm like, I'm lactose intolerant. And it's just gone off from there.
I see that. I can't remember who the fuck it was. Really went off the fucking rails on it.
Oh, yeah, because he, hold up here. We can just fucking find the conversation here, man. Because, you know, we got Ben, obviously, chiming in on everything.
Oh, of course.
Because
he's like, between him and Mike, I don't know.
We got my cousin Nicole, who's seen Forrest Gump over 100 times, which doesn't surprise me because I've seen it probably 40. Another listener, I'm scared of horses. Drazen at 32. One of my testicles is smaller than the other two.
Yeah, that one was like, way the fuck out. I was like, whoa.
To which, you know, Nick Arnold's like, live near Pripyat, do you? And, no, he lives in Backwoods, Vermont. He's in, where the fuck's he at? Son of a bitch. He's in Washington. Like, he's out in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Oh, and,
you know.
And I gotta give a shout out to Amber Poirier.
My cousin?
Yeah. I kind of liked the little
Chupa Corn of the Cobra. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we got some good fucking people on here. And
of
I mean,
of course, yes.
We've been doing this for almost 6 years, and we've never removed anybody from the page. No, we've removed one person because they were trying to run scams on people. We've never removed anybody for being an asshole.
No. And I've held off on.
Right.
A couple.
You do a little bit of looking. You're like, it's fine.
Yeah. But then now, like, I mean, there's one that I kind of added in that I'm still waiting on to see if any bullshit happens. But, you know, whatever.
We'll see.
So I guess then my other little like side quest rant thing is this. If we ever need to stage your motherfucking house, all we gotta do is go down, you know, just two houses down.
Oh, no, that's,
we got Local Fresh.
That's lavender.
No, that's sage, isn't it?
No, it says fucking Local Lavender on
the
sign.
Are you sure it's not sage?
I'm 100% because sage and lavender are not the same thing.
Okay. Scratch that.
Sage is for getting rid of ghosts and cooking. Lavender is for making things smell nice and helping you sleep.
I thought it was sage.
No.
Okay.
No.
I apologize. See? That's
no,
what I get.
You're way off, dude.
You're off.
No, not really, but.
Jesus. So,
Let's get back on topic that we never got on in the first place here.
Well, listen, I told you.
Fucking bantering and shit. Having conversations like humans. Speaking of which. This one blew my fucking mind. I saw a thing. It was on a podcast group that I'm on. Someone's like, I'm looking for recommendations for podcasts without any small talk or banter. And I'm like, who the fuck wants that? That's half the fun, is getting to know something about the person that you're listening to. Well, why would you want to listen to something where it's somebody just fucking, here's the facts, bloop, you know, and then that's the end of the show? That's silly to me. I want, if it's a single person doing something, yeah. Obviously you can't have a lot of conversation and banter unless they're like me, where they have conversations with themselves out loud.
I did that today, as a matter of fact. I was doing something, and the customer went, "What was that?" I go,
"No,
oh, nothing. I was just talking to myself.
I wasn't talking to you."
She's like, "Oh, okay." Yeah, but I do it to mom. I'm like, "I'm sorry. This is just what I do.
I don't want something where it's just two people sitting down and telling a story back. No, I want some fucking banter because I enjoy it. You know, like one of the shows I'm currently listening to is basically three dudes my age talking about wrestling from the 90s, and it's all them just bullshitting basically, and it's fantastic. If you're a wrestling fan, go check out Deadlock. It's fucking incredible.
Okay,
you know, it's great.
All right, so let's get into this episode for this week. So for this week's episode, we're going to cover a badass.
Oh no, okay. Again.
I know, and I kind of stumbled into him, and I never heard of him before, so I was like, but, well. I guess I should start off by saying this guy, I didn't know it, happens to be a local hero.
Ah, okay.
He's when I mean by local, I mean he's from Vermont. And, well, we'll get into that. So this gentleman that we're going to be covering for this week is Merritt Austin Edson.
Okay.
This fellow was one of those people that joins the military, then makes an impact, and then sees that he can do better and better.
Okay.
He's like one of those ones that starts from the bottom, goes to the top.
Okay. Yeah, like, son of a bitch, who was it? Oh my god, there was a guy that we talked about where he started off like fucking like dirtbag private and then like busted his way up through, and I can't remember who it was.
Jesus, I don't know.
I know Patton did it. Patton started off as like a fucking clerk, and then
yeah,
next thing you know, he's got the Spear of Destiny. He's dying in a fucking Jeep wreck.
Hey,
prove me wrong.
He
died in a Jeep accident. He had found an artifact.
I didn't say a word. It's possible that he
a lot of rumor and speculation that he had the fucking Spear of Destiny in his possession when he died, which is why he died.
Yes,
you know,
our own government took him out.
No, the.
It's our own government.
Predestination of having it killed him.
Come on.
Why would the government kill him, you dickhead?
First off, he's Patton.
Yeah?
Okay. No, there's no fucking way. That guy probably smoked a fucking cigar, was on top of fucking, you know, a Jeep or whatever, going, fucking rounds flying over his head. He was going, yep, looks like a good day for war. Well,
first of all, why would he be on top of a Jeep?
I don't know. Just because
he's a tank man. Like, he would have come home and not owned a vehicle. He would have bought a fucking tank.
That's true.
This is my road tank.
Yeah. This is my road tank. This is my everyday tank.
Sir, that's a Bradley fighting vehicle. I know they named it after me.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. Fuck you, they didn't.
So what do you drive when on leisure?
Tank.
The Abrams.
Yeah. When I really need to get into town and get back out, I'll take the Stuart. You know, just
and
get
I
in
want,
and gone. And
if I want to be classy, I might take the Sherman. I don't know. You know, maybe. Hold sentimental value. I mean.
I don't know, man. See, I would be looking to get some of them imports. Like, I know the Germans make a damn fine tank. I will be.
No,
well,
according to him, probably.
That
no.
Motherfucker could hide a Panzer in his bag to bring it home with him.
Yes.
Everybody else is trying to smuggle home Lugers and fucking no. Iron Crosses and swastika pendants and shit. And he's like, nah, don't worry about that.
So how many Lugers and did you bring home? He goes, no, I didn't bring. I brought other stuff home. Oh, so you brought this or that home? He's like, no, I brought home two Panzers.
He just riveted the fucking straps from an old rucksack into the side of it. Like, well, this is my carry-on.
I brought home two sir, Panzers, a Tiger, a Koenig Tiger.
Sir, that's a tank. No, that's not. It's my emotional support car. Fuck you.
Yeah. That's you don't know what you're talking about. That's a Jeep, Private. No, sir, that's a tank. No, that's
Did you just Jeep. Misgender my car?
Yes.
There's our editing quote of the night, probably.
Yes. Anyway. So Merritt was born in Rutland.
Oh, fucking Rutland, Christ. Vermont, oh, Jesus, this poor son of a bitch.
On April 25th of 1897. So he was born in the old Rutland Hospital. And he would be raised in Chester, Vermont, which is southeast of Rutland.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's southeast of Rutland, about
40-ish minutes, 45 minutes.
Maybe a little bit less.
Chester is one of those, like, man, you get down into that area, and you'll drive through four towns and not realize that you've driven through four different towns because they all look the same.
Sort of.
And that's coming from people that live in Pittsford, okay? So we've got some local listeners that are going to be fairly familiar with the area, including one who I believe lives in Chester or Springfield. But
well, Chester is, it's kind of like, it's close to the New York border and not far away from the Massachusetts border. So it's kind of like, it's in that area.
Chester's closer to New Hampshire than New York.
It's closer, I mean, it's closer to both. You can get to New York in how half hour, 45. All you have to do is go over the mountain.
Yeah, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, but hold on, really, here, you Kevin, it's literally like all you have to do is go south to Bellows Falls, which is the next town, and go over to
excuse
New
me, you did not say it correctly.
What? Fellows Falls.
There you go.
Sorry.
It has never been Bellows Falls in this house, goddammit.
Yes, sorry.
It's always been Fellows Falls. Yes. Because it's funnier.
It is true.
But yeah, it's way closer to New Hampshire than New York.
Okay, so
because that's Chester.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so he would, I'm guessing, have a normal childhood. I'm guessing it because
as normal as growing up in Chester can be.
Yeah, I mean, Chester's a nice town.
I'm allowed to pick on it. I have family there.
Yeah.
And actually, I believe fantastic local author that I've met more than once is also from Chester. Anybody looking for some paranormal, like, small-town shit, find some Joseph Citro books.
I think he's
either from Chester or Springfield.
I don't know.
But
there's a town like Hunter, Vermont, or whatever the hell it is. It's like a road that's actually in Manchester. Well, but I don't know.
But if you ever want a look at like small town Vermont in the late 80s, early 90s. Go read Shadow Child. It is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And like any really, really good book like that, big fucking twist, never see it coming until the last, like, three pages of the book.
And we are going to go on a little adventure at some point because we have to get put it on the page because we're going to go check out
Calendar 2.
Calendar 2.
Mm-hmm.
Over in Woodstock.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like,
I actually talked about Calendar 2 on a Patreon episode for Mysterious Circumstances. Justin fucking forever ago was like, hey, what are you doing? Like, nothing. He goes, want to come on for Patreon? I'm like, sure.
Oh, yeah, Justin.
Dude, this is like 3 years ago.
Whatever.
Like, yeah, whatever.
So, I'm still sore about it. It's okay.
Well, do you have the capability of recording from your home on short notice?
Maybe. Possibly.
No, you don't.
I do, too.
With what?
I have a fucking mic and a board. Yes, I have it all.
Well, I was going to say, my USB mic is strictly for Diablo communications, which I haven't done in a while anyway. But
no, mine's strictly for items related to getting COVID and then having to be here.
I mean, or if you weren't a bitch, you could get a PC and play Diablo like a real man.
You know what?
Just saying. Anyway.
I don't like you.
We're picking on Chester, and then we started talking about an author.
Yeah. Joseph Citro.
You
mentioned him. Okay.
Yes.
Is that who you
mentioned? Incredible.
Did you say that?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Go check him out.
Yeah.
Everybody.
He, most of his books are older, but
he
so
does,
is he.
But he does talk about, he has some books that are about stuff in Vermont.
I can count it. I can count the better part of a dozen of his books, nonfiction books, on my shelf right there.
Yeah.
And then another half dozen fiction at the bottom.
Yeah.
He's kind of a, kind of one of my go-to guys when it comes to books and shit. Mm,
yeah. Very much. So yeah, I'm just saying he had a normal childhood because it doesn't, what I was looking up, everything I found on him did not go into his childhood at all.
Yeah, probably, you know, working on family farm or some shit like that.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, they must have been well enough off because after finishing high school, or equivalent of, he would actually go to the University of Vermont.
Oh.
For 2 years.
Oh. Then you got that bachelor's degree, son.
No.
Oh.
No. It's would be only associates at that point.
Oh, I'm sorry. College man.
He, but this would be cut short because he would cut into it because in 1914, he would join the 1st National Guard unit as a private.
Oh, no shit.
And he joined because of the trouble in Mexico that was escalating.
1914?
Yep. He would be sent to Eagle Pass, Texas, to be on the border in case anything were to actually happen.
Right, right.
Nothing happened. So he wouldn't be there very long, and he would be back at the university for that fall.
He was probably fucking miserable in Texas, too.
Probably.
Because you go from summer here, where it's like, it's not great, and then you go down there, and it's like walking into Satan's asshole, except it's dry.
Yeah. So, and in fucking those uniforms.
Oh, they're all goddamn wool, dude.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So
They didn't need fucking body armor. That shit would stop them.
Mm, very much. But
also flame retardant.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Wool is naturally flame retardant.
Yep. Sure is. So he was back in the fall at university. Didn't stay there very long because, well, he would do another semester. And by June of that following year, so the end of that last semester, he would actually join the Marine Corps Reserve.
You got a taste for crayons in Texas.
Yes. Then by October, he would actually be promoted to second lieutenant. And then by July...
Really likes crayons.
Then by July of 1918, he would actually be promoted to first lieutenant. And he would be sent to France with the 11th Marines. And then he would...
Oh, no!
Well...
Oh, no! Like, 1917-ish? He was in France?
1918.
Yeah, because that's... Yeah, we got there, like, late 17, early 18.
Well...
The American Expeditionary Force.
He didn't do anything.
Okay, so he didn't war crime in France. No. That's unfortunate.
No, he was with the 11th Marines, and he would be sent... be in France for the last 6 months of the war.
God damn it.
That's
too bad.
When he came back from World War I...
Because you know dude wanted a fucking shotgun.
Probably.
He's like, I will go shoot the dicks off of these Germans with a 12-gauge in the trenches. I don't give a fuck.
He actually... Now, I did find... I have to stop right here. Because when I said that he joined the 1st National Guard, he actually went down to Boston to sign up.
Oh, okay.
He didn't sign up up here. For some reason, I don't know why.
I wonder if we didn't have one yet?
I'm not sure.
Let's find out. Keep going. I
thought we did. Because we actually had a base here.
Okay.
There was a full-time military base up in... whatchamacallit? The fuck's that town? Jericho. Up there. Or... Yeah. Anyway.
I mean... Technically, we had a National Guard started in 1764, which would have been the fucking Green Mountain Boys. And that was active until 1918. The Army National Guard was in 1860, was when that was founded here.
Well,
so
it was already, you know, he's... Yeah.
So, I mean, it was well established by this point. I don't know why he would have gone...
I don't know.
Hmm.
I guess maybe he wanted to make sure that he was going to... going to go to action, I guess, because he felt so strong. He, you know, this is the time period where he, you know, I hate to say it, but like he was, where men were men and they weren't scared to fucking go do war shit.
This is when war was still romanticized. World War One is kind of the one that's that put a.
We hadn't been to war since. San Juan, and we hadn't been before that since Civil War. So San Juan Hill, everybody was like, "Yeah, let's go."
Well, they just wanted to go to hang out with fucking Teddy Roosevelt.
It's true.
He's like, man, he's got a badass mustache, and he's going to kill all kinds of Spanish.
Every one of them.
Yeah. And then after a while, you just get... You get backed up.
Yeah.
And you're like, if I don't get rid of this, something bad's going to happen. Yeah. So that's just what happens with war here. We get backed up once in a while, and we got to
jerk out
a war.
We didn't have anything going on, and then we had a small few things going on that we helped out, the Mexican Revolution and whatever, but it wasn't anything big.
Yeah. Now we just send money to other countries while ours actually fucking burns.
Yeah.
No comment, though.
Yeah.
Fucking Christ. So Nero fiddles while Rome burns.
When he comes back from World War One, he would have several different assignments, and then in 1920, he would be officially promoted to first lieutenant.
Okay.
Because back then, usually what happens is, at least during this period of time in World War, I think all the way up to maybe Vietnam, maybe? I'm not sure. I could ask my brother or my dad. They'll correct me. But if you were promoted during wartime, you actually would be pushed back so that, you couldn't... not really so you couldn't do anything, but it was just a wartime thing that, complimentary thing that you're being pushed up a rank.
And yeah, then it's like, hey, you're back. Field promotion.
Yeah, you're back in the real world. All right, this goes away.
Yeah.
Sometimes it didn't.
More often than not, it did, though.
Yeah. So he went from first lieutenant back to second lieutenant, and then 1920, he got the official promotion to second lieutenant.
Okay. And the further up the ranks he goes, the worse and worse he gets at reading maps from what everybody is in the military has ever said. But you hit the rank of second lieutenant, then you go up to first, land nav is just fucking erased from your memory. And you're
okay, not this guy.
Okay.
Okay. This guy's from fucking Vermont.
That's true. He's hill folk.
Yeah. He's hill folk. So no, doesn't happen.
Cut this wire. Get this goddamn platoon on the move.
Who's that?
Oh, God, don't.
Anyway.
We should never have been allowed to watch fucking Bandit Brothers or Metal Gear Solid. Not Metal Gear Solid. Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
Yep. In my case, any of the three, actually.
It's true. It's true.
That's where my
retard
brain goes. It's like, I can quote any of these. That's fine.
Don't worry about
it. Fuck it. Who cares?
So just before... the year before, he would actually be assigned to the Marine Barracks at Quantico, Virginia. He would be stationed there from 1919 to 1921. Now, during this time period, he did actually find time. I know it might be rough for some people to think that, because this guy had a lot going on between, getting out of World War One to 1921. And this guy, I didn't put it in here because I was like, there was just so much schooling this guy went to.
Right.
I was like, that'd be boring as hell. And he just went from this to this to this to this, this all the way down through until he ends up in Quantico.
Okay.
Okay. He did find time to find a woman.
Okay.
That he liked and liked him and decided that, I'll marry this guy. So they would get married.
Nice. And that's also between yelling at lower enlisted for buying fucking Model Ts at a 20% APR.
Probably true.
Because if there's one thing I've learned from all my adventures on YouTube and watching previous military guys, it's that apparently when you enlist, you get real stupid with your money and you're like, oh no, I bought a Camaro. It's 75% APR. It's totally fine. That's what the guy at the desk told me. And you're paying $90,000 for a fucking $30,000 car. And then your sergeant yells at you because you're stupid.
Yes. And his wife's name was Ethel Winifred Robinson. And they'd be married in 1920.
Tell me you're an old white lady without telling me you're an old white lady.
Hey, whatever. Listen, it's okay.
I mean, Ethel is the oldest white, like the whitest old lady name of all time.
Probably.
It's okay. It is. It's just right. is.
It's fine. Don't let it, you know.
You know.
So then in 1921, he would actually be sent to Louisiana to be stationed with a unit that was assigned to guarding the mail.
Oh, wow. There's, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. Well, he had to do it.
Fucking guarding the laundry was all taken up.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This was actually short-lived because he somehow, I don't know how, but he gained the passion and love of aviation.
Okay.
And he would actually be assigned to go to Pensacola, Florida, where he would enter flight school. And then in July of 1922, he would be officially designated as a pilot. And he would then
wait, how long was he there?
So just like a full year.
Okay. That's not bad.
And then, so from Pensacola, he'd be transferred back to Quantico to be part of the air detachment.
Okay.
At Quantico. Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Then from 1923 to 25, Merritt would be stationed in Guam.
Ah.
Now, this is where...
One of our lesser known territories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this is where he would get to know the semi-tropical islands of the Marianas.
Oh, no.
Where, in the near future, he would actually become a little famous.
Oh, no.
And we'll discuss how famous this motherfucker is.
He gonna fuck up some zeros.
No.
No?
No. He ain't gonna fuck up no zeros.
Okay.
No.
Do zeros fuck him up?
Nope.
Okay, that's good, though.
No. He would then return stateside, like I said, 1925, and he would jump into an advanced aviation tactics class in Kelly Field, Texas. He would then go from there to attend the company officer's course at Quantico, Virginia.
Okay, so he's going back to Quantico.
Yeah, so this guy didn't fucking, you know, what? How's he saying go? Something about water. I don't know.
I was gonna say something about moss doesn't gather in a rolling stone.
Yes.
But yeah.
He didn't let that shit happen.
Yeah.
No. He was just like, okay,
I'm moving.
I gotta do this. Gotta do this. Gotta do this. Gotta do this. One ray after another. Okay. Advanced taxes school done. Complete. Boom. Gotta go to officers. You know, company officer training school. Gotta go do that. Boom. Right off to it. Does that. He graduated with the highest grades ever attained by any student up to that time.
Jesus Christ.
Because of physical reasons, though, he would actually have to give up his wings.
God damn it.
And, well, he has to go back to being a grunt. Go back to pounding the ground.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Because you know he wanted to just pound the sky.
He did. he would be actually sent to the Naval Yard in Philadelphia to serve as an ordnance officer.
And this is by far his worst assignment because he's in Philadelphia.
At that time, Philadelphia is probably not as shitty.
I don't know. I mean, this is the city that threw fucking batteries at Santa Claus, so...
I mean, this is only like 1926-ish.
Okay.
Maybe 25.
So this is pre-having to grease light poles if your team makes the playoffs.
Yeah, this is way before that.
We'll give him a break then.
Now, let's jump to the end of 1927. And like I said, I'm going to jump around a little bit because I don't want to bore the shit out of everybody with all the things this guy did, you know, from point A to point B. Because he went to a lot of schools, went to a lot of different places for being stationed. Like, there was between Philadelphia and his next assignment. I mean, he went to back to Quantico and back to Philly, back over to here, over to there. Right. It was just like a whole bunch of jumping around. A lot of it. So I was like, I'm not going to, you know, bore everybody with all that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just, you know, tell them. So, like I said, let's jump to the end of 1927. And Merritt would then be shipped off to another adventure. Okay. This adventure would land him with orders to serve on the USS Denver as the commanding officer of the Marine Detachment aboard the Denver. Okay. And he's the commanding officer. Well, Then he gets promoted to captain on December 21st of 1927.
Okay.
Okay. Then in 1928, he would actually be moved off of the Denver over to the USS Rochester to do the same exact thing he was doing on the Denver.
Okay. You know, he's just...
Yeah.
Just getting switching bounced ships. Around. Okay. Yeah.
Then while aboard the Rochester, his detachment would go ashore in Nicaragua from February 28th to August 1920. I'm sorry. Start that again. Then while aboard the Rochester, his detachment would go ashore in Nicaragua from February 1928 to August 1929. In command of 160 picked and specially trained Marines, he fought 12 separate engagements with the Sandino led bandits and denied them the use of the Poteca and Coco River valleys.
Where is this again? I'm sorry, Guam?
No, Nicaragua.
Okay, Nicaragua. Okay. Sorry, I missed that somewhere.
So this was where he would actually receive his first medal.
Okay.
Of many.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, this guy fucking, when he would walk into a officer's club, if he walked in when he was a spoiler, he becomes a general, okay? He would walk in and he'd have a fuck ton of ribbons.
Yeah.
And I do mean a fuck ton.
He has to constantly pull one side of his jacket to keep the shit from sliding off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all fucking earned.
He looks like he stole an African dictator's jacket.
Yeah. And he's got
fucking like Idi Amin's jacket where he had him from shoulder line to his waist, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually, and he earned every single one of them. Okay. Not like some.
Right.
So like I said, he received his first medal, and this was the Navy Cross for actions in which, quote, his exhibition of coolness, intrepidity, and dash so inspired his men that superior forces of bandits were driven from their prepared positions and severe losses inflicted upon them.
Good.
Okay, so that's why he would receive that. Now, from a grateful Nicaraguan government, Captain Edson was also rewarded the Nicaraguan Medal of Merit with Silver Star.
Ooh. Okay.
And he actually, while doing this, would receive, this is where he would actually receive his nickname, which was, I believe it was Red. I thought I was going to put it in, and I totally fucked it up. Hold on.
Shocker. One of us fucked up but didn't put shit in our notes? No way.
His name was Red Mike. It was Red Mike. This is where he was, this is where he got it.
Or as they would have called him in Nicaragua, Rojo Miguel.
Yes.
See, I knew a little bit of Spanish.
Yes.
It wasn't all just staring at my teacher and shit.
It was staring at your teacher and
shit.
It
was a lot of that, but yeah, a lot.
Pretty sure
the only people that learned how to speak Spanish and that were the girls in the class, but...
Probably.
The rest of it. I mean, you saw her.
I know.
Yeah. Mm. Hey, what do you expect? You put a 25-year-old South American girl in front of, like, a bunch of ninth grade boys? Like, we ain't gonna learn shit, dude.
If you can hear this, you just hear a lot of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I go to the bathroom? No. Oh. But I gotta. Yeah.
Anyway. So in 1941, he was again transferred off the ship to Quantico to command the 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, which was redesignated the 1st Separate Battalion in January 1942.
First separate battalion?
Yeah.
Okay.
The training exercises which he conducted in the succeeding months with the Navy high-speed transports, the APDs,
mm-hmm.
Led to the organization of the 1st Marine Raider Battalion.
Oh, okay. Shit.
Yeah. He was the leader of... He was the starter of this motherfucker. Shit. This guy's from Vermont.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, like, if you don't know, like, Marine Raiders... are bad fucking dudes. Yeah. Like, they're like up there with like Marine Force, like recon kind of guys. Mm-hmm. They're like in the same, except they're not like sneaking around. These are the guys that are going to kick your door in and shoot you in the fucking head until you stop moving. Yep. Yeah. Oh boy.
So this was in early 1942. This unit was the prototype of every Marine Raider battalion formed throughout the war.
Yeah.
He was then at this point in early 1942, he gets promoted again from captain to colonel. Okay.
Getting his little bird on.
Yep. On May 21st of 1941. So he would then get his first taste of the Pacific theater of World War II by going to American Samoa to train his Raider force.
And professional wrestlers and football players.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then on August 7th...
Offa and Seek out there just smashing motherfuckers' heads together.
So then on August 7th, Merritt and his Raiders, along with the 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines, would land on the beaches of Tulagi, British... Samoan Solomon Islands.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I pronounced that correctly.
See, it's weird. If they were the British Solomon Islands, why were we fighting there, not them?
I don't know. Maybe.
Too busy fighting a war in Europe. Yeah, fucking losers. We did both.
We
did both.
We're overachievers, okay?
You guys suck.
Well, they said, hey, you know, you fuckers in, you know, that country down under, you know, Australia. Go fucking
you
fight for us.
Fucking go.
in New Zealand. Go fight. Yeah,
New Zealand's like,
meh. Oh.
We have sheep and stuff to deal with here.
Okay.
I mean, we kid because, you know, the English were actually being attacked constantly. So.
So I got to take a little side quest.
Then they had to send the Canadians in to commit their war crimes during World War I. So they weren't going
to
do it.
So I have to take a little side quest because I mentioned New Zealand.
Yeah, Zealand and side quests, so we're talking Lord of the Rings now.
No, no.
Because Lord of the Rings is the ultimate side quest.
It actually has to do with war situation. Oh, I don't know if it's totally true. I hope it is. I wanted to look it up, but I saw this thing because I got into fucking... I do this every single time. I always watch different shit, then I have to go, oh, hey, I want to keep watching different things. So, well, I started watching... New Zealand do the haka.
Oh, yeah.
Different sports. And they're doing baseball, basketball. Was it? They also did that.
I think they do it for rugby and shit.
Rugby.
Obviously rugby. Rugby's but like cricket, maybe.
One. Yep. All of it. Well, anyway, I saw this one video. It was something about haka or whatever. And I'm like, wow, what the fuck is this? Is this basically the origins of it? I don't know. But it turns out it was just. I believe it was during World War II, and New Zealand happened to be, or World War I, I'm not sure. Well, maybe it was one. New Zealand was in trenches on one side, and then you had the Germans on the other. Well, one of the guys happened to, they heard like a German singing a song. They're like, oh, whatever, okay. So this other guy's like, hey, you should sing a song to this other guy.
Let's get up there and do our scary murder dance.
And the one guy's like, okay, I'll sing a song. So he starts singing a song, and then they start communicating back and forth. And they happened to, it was Christmas, I think it was, and this, one of the New Zealanders actually got some cookies from home, and he throws them over. And the Germans take them, and they're like, oh, nice.
Never had chocolate and coconut and caramel before.
Well, I don't know what it was. Well, so I know where you're going.
It was a regional joke.
I know where you're going.
We sent them Samoas. Because if we had sent them Samoans, they would have all died.
Well, so. Yes. So the Germans ended up sending something else back over, and one of the guys grabbed
gas.
It.
Oh.
No, and then they, I don't know, it's kind of like during World War II. With the whole, like, peace between the two sides.
That was World War I.
Or one, whatever. Yeah. Between,
They played soccer and shit on Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this happens to be kind of like the same thing.
I mean, you gotta think. They're all, like, fucking, like, teenagers, basically. Yeah.
But the New Zealanders, they're like, okay, well, we're gonna play soccer. All right. Their captain or whatever was British, and, you know, he's like, it's easy, boys. He's like, well, like, we don't know it. We play rugby.
These filthy Kiwis don't know how to play football.
They're like, we play rugby. They're like, well, they don't know how to play that. So you're just going to play, you know, football or soccer. And they're like, okay, fine. We'll play it. We're going to get our asses beat, but
we'll play it. We're not going to like it though.
But we have to, well, we want to save face and we want to have, you know, some dignity. So we want to do a haka. And they're like, he's like, no, you're not going to do a haka. Cause it's, you know, I've seen one of those performed and it basically caused an issue.
Yeah. And, satanic.
And, somebody almost got killed from it.
Yeah. That's kind of the point.
So he's like, well, we want to do this. So he goes over. Their captain or whatever goes over to the other captain of, and he's like, listen, they want to do a haka.
Exchange like, lineup cards and shit.
They're like, well, he's like, haka? And he kind of like vaguely translated, you know, kind of like said it, didn't really translate it. He's like, it's a dance. And they're like, you know, he's like doing like dance. He goes, and they all made fun of it. So then he's like, okay, fine. So they start doing the haka. And they're like taken back, like, oh my god, you know, this is crazy.
What the fuck are these guys doing?
Yeah. And the commanding officer's like, no, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. So they let him do it. And by the time they got done, they were like, holy shit, that was inspirational. Like, that was cool. Awesome.
Fuck.
And they gave him, you know, like a round of applause. They actually saluted him.
Yeah.
Every single one of the Germans saluted the Samoans. They were like, whoa. So, you know, they stood there.
Then the Kiwis like, dropped back down to their holes and fucking killed them all while yep. they were standing there. if you're a grown man and you want to cry, there is one where I believe he was a Maori that died in Afghanistan, I want to say fighting there. Mm. And they do like a full-on thing at his funeral. And yeah, you're a grown man and you will fucking cry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. So. Okay. That's how it works.
Well, back to off our side tangent here. So they're in the Solomon Islands. Okay.
That's how we got here.
Yes. Okay. 2 days of severe fighting secured this strategic island. This action was followed by raids of Savo Island and at
it's unpronounceable.
I'm going to fuck this up. But
you're going to.
I'm going to try it.
I dare you.
Tasman. Boko?
Sure.
Okay. Tasimboko.
Yeah.
Okay.
Close enough for government work.
Which was on Guadalcanal.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Colonel Edson was awarded a gold star in lieu of a Navy Cross for a successful conduct of the Tulagi operation. So now is where we get to the part where we turn this shit off and we move to a new podcast. Ha ha ha. You know? No, actually, you're not going to move to a new podcast. Fuck you all. You're going to listen to this.
If you were going to, though, you could go over to patreon.com/darkwindowspodcast. It's the same show by the same idiots, except you just have to pay for this one.
Yeah.
$5 a month. Gets
Wait,
you access.
Hold on. Stop. Hold the presses. Hold the presses.
Huh.
We're possibly going to lower it down to $3.
We're thinking about it. We're thinking about dropping down to $3 to see what happens, see if... we can get some more of you suckers or like fine, wonderful people. We can convince you to come give us a shot. So it's something we're working on here in the next couple months. We're considering doing just to see how it works out. So,
all right. So I tried just to.
And it's just to prove that we're not. Yeah. We don't think we're that good. We're only worth a couple bucks, whatever. Yeah. $5 isn't even that much, but.
I'm not doing this for a living. Fuck it.
Wish. God damn.
Okay.
Numbers keep going the way they are, though.
No.
Hey.
So. In all actuality, no, this is the part where we get into where he would be part, take part in events that would later lead to him being awarded the Medal of Honor.
Okay? This is where we go from mild to Szechuan style.
Yes, very
about
much.
About to get spicy.
We're going to get very, very fucking spicy.
I like
spicy.
It.
You know, we're going to go from like...
Put the fucking dragon oil right to it.
We're probably going from jalapeno to, say... Carolina Reaper.
Oh, that's pretty fucking
we're
hot.
Fucking going boom.
Yeah.
Big time.
Like I said, we're putting the dragon oil to it. That shit will burn your asshole by smelling it.
Yes.
Woof.
So before we continue on, let's just take a break right here and we'll come back and we'll get into this shit. So this heroic act happened between September 13th to the 14th of 1942 on Lunga Ridge, which if you look it up, you will actually see that It is now called Edson's Ridge.
Okay.
So I know most of you fuckers will be like, no, Kevin, it's all actually called this. Well, it was called that.
It was called that until we got there.
And after the battle, actually everyone else would actually refer to it as Bloody Ridge.
Okay.
Because it was pretty fucking bloody. This part of the Guadalcanal, it had an airfield on it. Okay. And it was very strategic that it be held at all costs.
Right.
Now, here's the account of actually what happened on those 2 days. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be forthright with everyone. I took this verbatim from everything that, because I found it so many places. And I was like, hey, why not go to the source that actually spills it all out verbatim of what happened?
Yeah, fair enough.
Because, I mean, I'd probably fuck it up. So, here it is. At first light on September 13th, P-40s and Grumman F-4F Wildcat fighters came swarming down on the Japanese.
P-40s are pretty badass, though.
The strafing from air in the howitzers of Don Pedro del Valle's 11th Marines combined with the mortars of the infantry units made the enemy run for cover.
Oh, wearing shorts today. Now you're getting chilly?
Well, it's also like fucking 60 degrees in here and like 85 out there, so.
Shrapnel from the American fire damaged Kawaguchi's shortwave radio. And Kawaguchi is one of the leaders of the Japanese
Navy.
Well, not Navy, but the forces on the ground.
Okay.
Okay. He was now cut from Rabdal and had no way of communicating his movements to the 7th Army headquarters.
That's too bad.
17th Army headquarters, sorry.
That's too bad. Sucks to be him.
Yeah, for sure.
Good guys are about to win one.
Yes. Kawaguchi still had his brigade radio and urgently tried to make contact with his scattered battalions and consolidate his forces for a push on Henderson Field.
Oh.
And this is the name of the airfield.
Oh. Henderson Field. I believe, is that the one that John Bassalone defended? It sounds really fucking familiar.
Maybe. So, meanwhile, Edson was also preparing his next move. The soft-spoken raider commander wasted no time in organizing a counterattack against the Japanese to regain Company C's former position. Unfortunately, the attempt to drive out the enemy failed. So that morning, Edson had called his company commanders to the CP. And as they squatted around him, he ate his cold hash out of a can and issued his orders. And they were as, quote, now, sorry for the language, folks, but it's his quote, and I'm going to say it verbatim.
He's going to say Japs, isn't he?
He is. They were testing, just testing. They'll be back. I want all positions improved, all wire lines paralleled, a hot meal for the men. Today, dig, wire, uptight, get some sleep. We'll all need it. As he stood, he continued, the nip will come back.
Ah.
I want to surprise him. Just before 1900 hours, Kawaguchi's hordes jumped off and struck B Company's lines on the open ground of the ridge. Understrengthened, because of wounded men and illness in their ranks, the weary Marines managed to merge with Company C. But Kawaguchi did not capitalize on the opening day like he should have. They actually withdrew for the evening.
Can I interrupt you for a
yes.
second? Okay. So the reason Henderson Field sounded so familiar is I was wrong. It was not John Bassalone that I was thinking of. It was Marine Corps Jesus, Chesty Puller.
Ah.
Was the commander there. So, yeah. Uh-huh. You motherfuckers have to say goodnight to him during boot camp. So he's kind of important.
Well, they might say, goodnight to Merritt Edson, too.
Yeah, but he didn't look like a bulldog, I'm assuming.
Well, Merritt Edson has, not really, but Merritt Edson has some places and things, different things that Chesty Polar doesn't have. Ha ha.
Anyway.
An area code that starts with 802.
It's like, I'm sorry.
Or a zip code that starts with 05.
Being from the 802, yeah, from Vermont. If we can get an advantage over someone else,
yeah,
fuck you.
And here's the thing that's stupid. Okay, so I am 35 years old for now. Up until last year, you called anywhere in this goddamn state, you never had to put 802 in front of it. Now, if you call into a different town, you do. Because we think we're getting all fucking worldly and we got to put area codes in front of shit now.
Oh, and by the time you hear this, on that day, the day of the 18th.
Yeah.
Will be,
my goddamn birthday.
His birthday.
Yeah. So happy birthday to me. I'll get to spend it at work.
Uh-huh.
My new job and shit. So
yeah.
I'm going to get an ice cream cake this year. Because I'm sad and poor.
It's okay.
When you motherfuckers send me an ice cream cake via the mail. What's up? You got runned over? You got runned over? No way. What's up, dude? You hang out for a little bit?
You want your food now or you wait?
What's up, buddy?
It's like, I got Wally.
Did you get chicken feed?
Yes, it's in my truck.
Oh. Okay, because they've eaten. I haven't collected eggs in 3 days, and there was 3 eggs in there.
Oh, shit.
At least they've been.
You say hi?
Yes.
Yeah. No, leave that on. Say hi. Say. But yes, it's in the backseat of my truck if you want to feed them.
Say one. Two. Three.
Okay, so
yeah, where do we leave off?
Yeah.
Before we're so rudely interrupted.
So Kawaguchi withdrew for the evening, didn't capitalize.
Whichever fucking dirt bike company it was.
Yep. Didn't capitalize on having so many Marines knocked out of the battle.
Yeah.
Because they could have taken the area. They could have wiped them out.
Well,
but they didn't.
They used Chesty Polar as a spawn point.
Yeah. Well, the Marines had
he
lost.
He just shits Marines.
The Marines had lost a third of their men and were forced to fall back to consolidate their defenses. Marine Corps leadership knew another fight would ensue the next evening. As the outnumbered Marines worried about their position, Colonel Edson simply said, quote, "It is useless to ask ourselves why it is we are here. We are here. There is only us between the airfield and the Japs."
And I was also wrong. That's where... You know how my brain is. John Bassalone received his Medal of Honor for actions during the battle for Henderson Field on Guadalcanal.
Okay.
So, yeah.
We
covered him because he's a fucking... He's a badass.
Yes. Okay, yeah, so sorry. I'll continue the quote.
Yeah.
Or actually, I'll restart it.
Now that my ADHD flare-up has fucking receded for now.
Colonel Edson simply said, "It is useless to ask ourselves why it is we are here. We are here. There is only us between the airfield and the Japs. If we don't hold, we will lose."
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We'll lose Guadalcanal. Sorry. Yeah. That was the finish it.
Yeah.
Throughout that day, Marines under Edson's direction prepared for the coming battle by strengthening defenses, digging fortifications, zeroing in mortars, securing the support of artillery, and getting needed rest. Wave after wave of attack came, with each one reducing Marine numbers and weakening defenses. But the Marines held. In the end, the Japanese retreated, too diminished to effectively assault the airfield.
Yeah, because
by 4 a.m., Merritt would call for reinforcements, and he would get them. Edson's Marines moved off the ridge on the 14th and bivouacked in Kukum for a much deserved rest.
I mean, we said it more than once about the Japanese during World War II. If they were anything, it was persistent.
Yeah.
They were almost as bad as the Russians with just throwing dudes into the meat grinder. Mm-hmm. Whereas we were like, we didn't really wanna. You know, we'd give up land to come back and fight again. You know, we weren't gonna die for every square foot of land that we could hold. You know, it wasn't our thing.
So now the So they got the rest, okay? But, however, the cost of victory was not cheap.
No.
The 1st Raider Battalion lost 135 men.
Of?
Like 500.
Oh, Jesus.
Or 800. 800 men. Okay.
Fuck.
The 1st Parachute Battalion, another 128.
Jesus.
Of this, 59 Marines were dead or missing in action. Of the 377 paramarines who had landed August 7th on Guadalcanal, approximately 86 remained.
Holy shit.
The Raiders had gone ashore with 750 in their ranks, and they had sustained 234 killed, wounded, or missing.
That's not a good ratio.
No. As At a result all. Of their tremendous loss, the Chutes, as they referred to,
yes.
left Guadalcanal on September 18th, but the Raiders remained. Like so many others that we have actually covered on this podcast, he didn't end his career with the end of World War II. He would actually continue to serve in the military. He would go on to be promoted to several more times, and then in 1943 he would be promoted to chief of staff of the 2nd Marine Division, which was then preparing for Tarawa.
Oh, no.
Okay. And then by 1944, he was now the rank of Brigadier General.
Son of a bitch.
Okay.
Hey, man.
So he's the 4th highest that you can get.
Hey, fucking started from the bottom.
Yeah.
You know.
And promoted to Chief of Staff of the Fleet Marine Force of the Pacific. For his services during the ensuing year, he was awarded a Gold Star in lieu of a 2nd Legion of Merit. Duty as Commanding General, Service Command, Fleet Marine Force, Pacific, rounded out 44 months of continuous service in the war zone. So he would actually, like I said, he would round out 44 months of continuous service in the war zone.
Damn.
Okay. 44 continuous months.
That's a long fucking time.
Never come home. When a young officer once asked him when he might expect to be rotated back to the United States, Brigadier General Edson replied, "When the war's over. When my job's done." Well.
Okay.
In December 1945, he was assigned to the office of Chief of the Naval Operations. And in February 1947, to Marine Corps headquarters.
Which would be back into Virginia?
Yeah.
So back
he came back stateside.
Yeah, back to like Quantico, I think.
Yep.
Yep.
Now, this would follow with retirement from active duty at the age of 50.
Damn.
And after more than 30 years in the military service of his country. So...
You imagine being able to retire at 50 and not have to worry about working anymore?
He was actually promoted. Hold that thought.
Okay.
He was promoted to Major General. This is 3rd highest rank.
So he's a 2-star at this point.
He is a 3-star.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So he's 3rd highest. You can go. Next one is 4.
Then 5.
But there's never been a 5-star, I think.
Last 5-star general. Let's find out.
Yeah,
there has been.
Of the Marines.
Oh.
Yeah. So he was promoted to Major General at the time of his retirement on August 1st of 1947.
The last overall 5-star general was fucking Omar Bradley. And he retired in 1962. Mm. Then they named a vehicle after him. Or... Patton, whoever you want to believe, according to my made-up story from earlier this episode.
So, I know everyone is thinking, okay, this guy is going to take his military retirement, set up, go off in the sunset.
No, because if he retires, he has to come back here.
Yeah, like John Wayne. Well, okay, so, yeah, so he takes his retirement. And, well, I wish it was the case that he would actually retire.
Oh, no.
He doesn't.
Uh-oh.
And you said he comes back here?
Yeah.
Huh. Surprise. He actually does.
Okay.
And, well, he, you know, like many others in Vermont, you know, that are in the military or whatever, retirement's not for me. I'm not going to retire.
No.
No. No, no.
Forgot how much I hate this place. I got to go back and fight people in other countries.
No, no.
No?
He would go on to become the Vermont State Trooper's first commissioner.
No shit.
Yes.
Wow.
Organizing the force partially from an older organization of motor vehicle officers. He set up an efficient organization on a semi-military basis, a system which has since been adopted by other states.
And he would have also been, he would have been involved with the disappearance of that girl in the Bennington Triangle, because that's where the fucking state police came from, is because of that missing persons case.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah. And
interesting.
He actually
came to. Way to fucking tie it back around.
Yeah. And he actually came to, well, our hometown.
Yeah. Because that's where the police barracks is. Yes. It's not fucking 5 minutes from where we sit.
Yes. Not 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't good enough for him, and he kind of didn't want to settle on it. Well, he would then return to Washington, D.C. in July of 1951 to become the executive director of the National Rifle Association, NRA.
Nice.
His major efforts in that post were directed in stimulating the interest of Americans in rifle marksmanship.
Back when the NRA was an actual good organization and not just a political piece of shit that ruins everything and, you know, votes in favor of gun control in some cases.
Yeah. So concurrently, he campaigned vigorously for a Marine Corps adequate both in size and strength for its many commitments. He would unfortunately pass away on August 14th of 1955.
Okay.
Now, I have to be honest, I really only touched on a few of the parts, like I had said previously, of this wonderful man's career, because, well, if I didn't touch on a few of those parts, it would just, you know, like I said, just drag out.
Yeah, like going through all of his schooling and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, we could be here for a while longer. Or we would have to do a two-parter.
Yeah. And the first part would have been boring, because that was before he started killing Japanese during World War II.
From what I read...
And I don't feel like he was a lead-from-the-back kind of guy. No. I think he was out there, like, fucking skulls.
He was, like...
You know?
What you don't gather from why he would receive the Medal of Honor was that because he was on the front line barking orders. Get here. Get there.
He was out there smashing dicks and, you know.
And the guys, some of the guys, actually, I saw a quote where one of the guys was like, he was scared shitless of them.
As you should be.
Oh, my God. You know.
As you should be.
I mean, this guy was just standing there doing what he's doing. Actually, like we always do, I will actually read his citation.
Nice.
Now, from what I read and learned about him, he was one of those guys that started from the bottom as a private and rose to the top. Listen, mister.
You're breaking noise regulations, sir.
You just better stop it.
I don't bite me, you little shit. Don't. I said don't bite me, not continue to bite me, you turd.
So, he raised that...
He just like, rubs his hands on his legs like he's not doing anything wrong. You little shit.
So he rose to the top to Major General in the Marines, which is the third highest, like I said. Not too bad for a boy from a small town in Vermont.
Fuck yeah.
So in addition to the Medal of Honor, two Navy Crosses, a Silver Star, and two Legion of Merits, General Major Edson's numerous decorations included the Presidential Unit Citation with two Bronze Stars, the Mexican Service Medal, World War I Victory Medal with Maltese Cross,
ooh,
Second Nicaraguan Campaign Medal, China Service Medal with Bronze Star,
mm-hmm,
American Defense Service Medal with Bronze Star, American Campaign Medal, Asiatic Pacific Campaign Medal.
Right.
With 6 bronze stars.
Jesus Christ.
Because he was fucking there.
He was dude, he was going. Long time. He was going fucking bananas over there.
The World War II Victory Medal.
Yep.
The Distinguished Service Order, British Empire.
He just fucking bit me so hard. Dude, you're so mean. Why are you so mean to me?
And the Nicaraguan Medal of Merit. Edson served...
No, you cannot bite that.
you have one of those. You don't want to bite it.
No.
General Edson served on active...
All right, what do you got to say?
Talk.
You know what we could do that would probably keep him busy? We could set up that other microphone, not plug it in, and then put him in his high chair and just stick it in front of his face.
Probably. Yeah.
Teach you some history shit, sir.
So, General Edson served on active duty from 1917 through 1947. So, 30 years of military service.
Yep.
So, and this tradition was actually carried on by his sons, Herbert, and late Merritt Austin Edson Jr. And his grandson, Colonel David W. Edson, who currently serves as the deputy director of the Kurlak Center for Applied Creativity aboard Marine Corps Base Quantico. Now,
so another one that was also not badass, but also progenitor of badasses. What? Dude, you're so loud.
What's up, dude?
The big laugh. I love it.
He would have he would actually have a hall named after him called Edson Hall, which unfortunately has been taken down, and a new building has been constructed or is going to be constructed. Yep. They have several buildings in the area that are going to be built.
Where was that?
This is at the
You don't even know what you're talking about.
I think he does.
He doesn't, though. He's like me. He just likes to talk.
Well, this is Quantico.
Oh, okay. Nothing up here.
Yeah. No.
Which, like, why? Why don't we have anything for this guy up here?
I don't know. Because, well, it's where the Marine headquarters are.
Yeah, but still, he was a...
So, General Edson's service was commemorated with the dedication of the USS Edson, a U.S. Navy destroyer that was... in active service from 1958 through 1988.
Nice.
And is now the principal display of the Saginaw Valley Naval Ship Museum, located in Bay City, Michigan.
I was going to say, it's got to be somewhere near Saginaw, Michigan, yep. I would assume.
Yep. On, on August 21st of 1964, in recognition of Edson's significant contributions to combat marksmanship throughout his career, Edson Range was dedicated at Camp Pendleton,
nice.
California.
Nice.
Now home to Weapons and Field Training Battalion Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego.
Right. So if you're West Coast and you're going to the Marine Corps, that's where you go instead of them shipping your happy ass all the way over to Paris Island.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, some... went to San Diego.
Or you go there for like AIT or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Now, he does actually, in Rutland, have a monument that is dedicated to him. It's not like a big one, but it should be bigger.
Yeah.
In my opinion, because I never knew who the fuck this guy was. Never knew him.
So, I had no idea until you mentioned him like yesterday. I'm like, oh, shit, really?
And it's in front of...
it's down by the firehouse, like in front of the firehouse on Route 7.
Well, it's down from
that little, like that little area there.
It's the funeral home in front of there.
Yeah, but it's the same general area. It's that little street that runs parallel.
So here is...
At least he's in a nice part of town.
Yes.
Where it's not a bunch of crackheads and shit yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was the other end of town, then we'd be getting pissed on constantly and we'd have to kill people.
So here is his citation for his... Medal of Honor.
Yes.
Okay.
Do it.
The President of the United States of America, in the name of Congress, takes pleasure in presenting the Medal of Honor to Colonel Merritt Austin Edson, United States Marine Corps, for extraordinary heroism and conspicuous intrepidity above and beyond the call of duty as commanding officer of the 1st Marine Raider Battalion with parachute battalion attached during action against enemy Japanese forces in the Solomon Islands on the night of the 13th and 14th September 1942. After the airfield of Guadalcanal had been seized from the enemy on 8 August, Colonel Edson, with a force of 800 men, was assigned to the occupation and defense of a ridge dominating the jungle on either side of the airport. Facing a formidable Japanese attack, which augmented by infiltration had crashed through the front line, our front lines, he, by skillful handling of his troops, successfully withdrew his forward units to a reserve line with minimum casualties. When the enemy, in subsequent series of violent assaults, engaged our forces in desperate hand-to-hand combat with bayonets, rifles, pistols, grenades, and knives, Colonel Edson, although continuously exposed to hostile fire throughout the night, personally directed defense of the reserve position against a fanatical foe of greatly superior numbers. By his astute leadership and gallant devotion to duty, he enabled his men, despite severe losses, to cling tenaciously to their position on a vital ridge, thereby retaining command not only of the Guadalcanal airfield, but also of the 1st Division's entire offensive installments in the surrounding area.
He was a bad dude. Yes. Like, we could have just said that, you know?
I was talking to somebody at work today. All I could think of was when I read this and everything about him was that he was kind of like, oh, Jesus. What's his name? I can't think of it. The one from Maine. That was the captain, colonel, whatever he was, that was in charge of the 1st Maine or whatever that was on Little Round Top.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Or any of those guys that was basically right there, you know, could have been shot at any point.
Mm-hmm.
But was going from position to position, telling his guys, get here, do this, do this, do that. Come on, boys, you know, cheering them on. You know, give them what for. Everything he needed to do and everything they needed to hear from their commanding officer,
yeah.
He did.
Just being there and helping and
yeah,
motivating.
Yes.
Would be the other one to think about.
Now, there are plenty other things for like why he received the Navy Cross, the Gold Star, lieu of a second Navy Cross, Legion of Merit. Why he received that?
Well, because like you can't keep giving people the. It's the same reason that fucking Dan Daly got 2 Medals of Honor instead of 3, because you can't do that because some fucking wiener in Washington, D.C. pushing papers decides that, well, it wouldn't be fair if we gave him 3 or if we gave him a second one.
I found a source where it kind of like tells why he received each one of those citations.
Okay.
But I won't go into that. If everybody wants to see it, I can, you know, I can find it and just put it up on the page for everybody to see. But yeah, I mean, that's Merritt Edson.
Bad motherfucker. Yeah. Is he buried around here? Is he in?
I don't know.
Okay.
Did not find that.
Because I know that we have a Medal of Honor recipient buried in Rutland.
Yeah.
But that was a Civil War Medal of Honor. And they kind of got a little crazy with those where they kind of those out like crazy.
So, yes, I do know where he was buried. Arlington Cemetery.
Okay, he's in Arlington. Okay. Yeah. Where he belongs.
Yeah.
But no, like the Civil War, they handed out fucking Medal of Honors like candy.
Yeah. It was to a lot of people.
The guy that was in, that's buried in Rutland, that's, he was originally, I think, from Middlebury. Ripley Road was named after him in Rutland because he had a factory down there, his family owned, but I can't remember exactly what he did, but it was nothing fucking remotely close to what, when you think a Medal of Honor recipient, it's not even remotely close to that. It's, mm-hmm. you know, he was in the right place at the right time and he, you know, did one or two things and they're like, okay, cool, great. Here's your thing. And, they sent him on his way. But, this dude, pretty badass.
Yeah.
You know?
I was like, holy shit. I didn't know that.
Small town kid makes good.
Yeah.
You know,
I didn't know that anything about him. I saw, you know, this little thing about him and I was like, what the hell? And then I saw the monument dedicated to him. And I was like,
I know where that is.
I know where the hell that is. No shit. Wow. That's kind of cool. So, yeah.
And, you know, if this guy had been born 150 years earlier, he would have been nailing wigs to the inside of fucking Fort Ticonderoga with the rest of them.
Probably.
Speaking of which, I know I plug them quite frequently, but Let Them Fight. Their most recent episode they put out was about a gentleman by the name of Israel Putnam. And if you're from our neck of the woods or upstate-ish New York, you should probably listen to that episode because they mention a lot of places where he went and did crazy shit during the Revolutionary War. Fought at Fort Ticonderoga during the French and Indian War. Was it Fort Edward? I believe he was a crucial part of building. It was either Fort Edward or the other one there. Fort Henry, one of the two. But yeah. Good fucking episode if you're into some Revolutionary War shit. Yeah, it was fucking, it was good, but not as good as this. I'm only saying that because it was ours, though. So. but anyway, yeah, head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/darkwindowspodcast. $5 a month will get you access to, by the time you're hearing this, all 82 episodes that we have up on Patreon. And anything that we have coming out in the future. This week, we're going to talk about some interesting shit. And like we always do. I'm sure we'll find something to bitch about, like we always do. Because we always seem to start off on topic and then fucking work ourselves up into geopolitical bullshit or something. And
it's mostly Kevin.
Yeah, mostly me. But you listen to it because you have to. Because you're
true.
Trapped in my house because I'm between you and both doors. So, also, head on over to studio.com. Grab yourself some headphones, some earbuds, or a fantastic Bluetooth speaker. Throw it in your cart. 15% off when you put in Dark Windows 15 at checkout. And, I mean, it's August, but you got to think holidays are going to be here before you fucking know it.
Shut up.
And
I don't want to hear that.
Headphones and earbuds are always a good winter holiday gift. I can say Christmas if you want. That's fine.
Don't you dare say it.
What? Christmas?
Christmas. I don't want to hear that.
It is what it is, you know.
It is not what it is.
It's getting here, is what I'm saying. Fuck it. Buy somebody a Halloween present. Nobody ever thinks about Halloween.
Yes.
Halloween's my favorite.
It's fucking shit.
And we're going to be running the haunted house this year in Pittsburgh, so...
Yes.
Fucking once the dates come up, we'll let you guys know. And if you're in the area, come check it out. Yeah. If you're not, fuck you. Come check it out. Because I think
get your fucking asses here. And guess what?
Yeah,
you possibly might get the best two fucking guides that the haunted house
well,
has.
Well, it's you're getting the best two by proxy because two of the other four best guides in that place are not working it this year.
Like I said,
that being Seth and Shelby, so
two of the best guides that there is.
But we have discussed it, and we're pretty sure we're gonna be like, dude, bro, dickhead, ghost hunters.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Oh my god, man! Did you see that?
I'm going like full on like dildo Baggins, and I might get a shirt that's too tight and some like really expensive jeans or something, and it's gonna be fucking great. You guys are gonna like it. I mean, come on. When was the last time we did it? 2019. right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's been, this will be 3 years, well, 4 years since we've done it because of COVID. And then because of, call it politics, last year is why we didn't do it. But yeah, it's gonna be a thing. I'm excited. So with that being said, just because you can't see out into the dark doesn't mean that the dark can't see into you. And
peace out.
Yeah.
Are you tired of hearing the same stories of true crime, weird history, and the paranormal?
Now dubbed the Night Stalker, the crime spree covers 50 miles. The suspect varies the time, place, and type of attack, but he always enters through an open door or window.
Watching John Gacy's suburban Chicago home for the past 10 days. They became suspicious when 15-year-old Robert Peast disappeared after he allegedly was last seen with Gacy. This morning, police searched Gacy's home and found the decomposed remains of three bodies, dirt crawl space under the house. They suspect there are several more bodies buried here.
In Miami, Judge Edward Coward is expected to rule today on two defense motions in the trial of Theodore Bundy. He's accused of murdering two co-eds at Florida State.
Good evening. The most intensive manhunt in New York City's history is over. The police have arrested a man they say is Son of Sam, the killer who stalked the city streets for a year with a .44 caliber revolver, shooting to death six young people and wounding seven others. The suspect is David Berkowitz, a 24-year-old.
A Virginia man claims he spotted Bigfoot.
Next guest may have taken one of the best ever pictures of the Loch Ness Monster, a creature about 2.5 meters long.
Channel 10 News and the police department have been flooded with phone calls from people reporting UFO sightings.
Don't worry, you are not alone.
Hi, welcome to Macabre Emporium. This fall, we invite you to experience the Macabre Emporium. Twice a month, we will bring you a lesser-known tale of true crime, weird history, or the paranormal. So come on in and browse the shelves of the Macabre Emporium. You never know what you will find here.